this heaven?
No. It's Iowa.
Hey guys, sorry I'm running a little late. I had to come from somewhere else and I had to have sex with like 3 or 4 women and then save the world. So apologies. Took me a little while to get here.
Ben, there's a saying in England where there's smoke, there's fire. we say that in Iowa.
Is that that's a British slogan? I mean, is that did the British come up with that, Sean?
Well, you better get back to boning. Because it's not happening here.
Speaking of making love, we're talking From Russia with Love on the Pod of Dreams.
Only the second James Bond thriller could be more exciting than the first.
Another Bulgarian they use as a killer. Take a look. You should remember him. This man kills for pleasure.
James Bond, that notorious, amazing Dr. No secret agent, is back. And half the world is out to kill him. As he pits his murderous talents against the Iron Curtain and its velvet women.
Well, I'll tell you something, Coltourney. You're one of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen.
I think my mouth is too big.
No, it's the right size. For me, that is.
From Russia with Love comes Tatiana, bait for the trap. From the four corners of the world come the men and women who play a deadly, dangerous game of espionage.
Do not be alarmed, my friend. We will make you as comfortable as possible.
Ali Kerim Bey, head of Station T, Turkey. Krasnogramsky, codename Grant, chief executioner of Spectre.
My orders are to kill you and deliver the lector. No, I do, it's my business.
M of British Secret Service, the woman called Rosa Klebb, playing a double cross.
Klebb. Romanov, the door. Romanov!
Russia with Love. They dance for him. They yearn for him. They die for him.
Hello, everybody. So, welcome to the Pod of Dream. Oh, hello.
So, what took longer, boning the three ladies or saving the world?
Saving the world was probably by about 2 minutes. I mean, they were both in under about 45. You know, I could get through three ladies in 45 minutes. And that's about how long it takes to
satisfy them.
Yes, and also, you know, defeat a bunch of evil corporation.
Upside. I don't think Bond is concerned with satisfying the women. Do you?
Well, we don't know. I mean, they're happy for it.
They can't get enough of them.
That's true.
Yeah, we're talking From Russia with Love on the Pod of Dreams here, and we're just getting right into what is probably one of the horniest movies I've ever seen, From Russia with Love.
This movie was horny.
This is the second of the quote-unquote canon Bond films.
Wait, and you guys think this is hornier than other Bond movies? I mean, it's a horny Bond movie, but it's not like... Maybe you think it's the horniest Bond movie?
Well, of the ones I've seen, I've probably seen maybe half of them. Like, compared to GoldenEye, this is more... I mean, there's some in all of them. Right, yeah. It's not like any of them are sexless. But they get progressively less... I would say the recent ones are not quite as intense as this one in terms of just lingering shots on cleavage and just literally every woman with a speaking part is horned up at some point in this movie. Yeah. The villain, she's horned up for the spy lady. I mean, literally every single one. We don't see any women who are just existing in an asexual way and doing stuff.
Even Moneypenny is horned up. Yeah.
Every single one. Yeah. And here's the thing I thought about this movie. Like, in 30 years, whenever it comes out in the public domain, you could, without making any other edits, just turn this into a porno by just adding sex scenes. There's like clear cutaways. There's setup. There's anticipation. And you could just throw straight porn scenes in it.
They even film him boning in one scene.
Yeah, you get one, but then, literally, it cuts away a whole bunch of times, and you just, you could just out and out have body doubles trying to, recreate what happened. I mean, it's ludicrous. And so much of it's pointless and needless. Like, the Turkish representative has got a hot young wife, and she's just sitting there in his office, come over here, I'm bored, I need it. We have a bizarre gypsy sequence where there are two gypsies fighting over a man, and then in the end, they both get bond for a night.
And then the part that's so great about that is there's this big shootout and firefight, and after Bond's helping a guy who was shot, Bond's killed like four guys, and he sits down with the other guy, and he's like, so who won the fight between two women? It's like, we'll let you decide, Bond. It's like, he's just killing guys, and now he wants to fuck. That's James Bond.
Yeah, and when the film is either about the plot, what's happening, who are the motives, or it's about sleazing it up. Well, you don't just want the Lecter. Well, not just. It was ludicrous. I don't remember. It's been a while. I mean, obviously, I've seen Goldfinger multiple times. Dr. No, I think I've seen The Man Who Lived Twice, which has him pretending to be, I think, a Chinese man, an Asian man of some sort. It's very ludicrous. But this one, I was shocked by just how relentless it was. And it wasn't just Bond. That was what was crazy. It wasn't just Bond. It was mostly Bond. It was everybody. But before we even dive into that, I've got a pretty casual relationship with James Bond. I like the movies. There are people who really love them. I don't hate them either. They're kind of these fun little cultural curiosities. This is one I've heard is one of the quote-unquote good ones. I hadn't seen it before, plus I wanted to talk Bond. Are either of you big Bond aficionados? Ambivalent? What's your relationship to the James Bond franchise?
When I was little, and this is in grade school, I would watch Bond all the time. Oh. I mean, it was always playing on cable.
Okay.
So I watched most of them, and as a kid, for some reason, and this is, my view has changed now, but Roger Moore was always my favorite Bond.
What was it about Roger Moore as a kid that, it's just cool Bond, vibes?
Yeah, he seemed to be the coolest Bond, for me anyway.
Well, sure, there was Moore, Connery, and then Lazenby, right? Were the only three choices at that time, because this is prior to Dalton and prior to Brosnan. No.
I think I saw Timothy Dalton in the theater.
Oh, okay.
It was another Russian one. I guess they probably were all Russian ones.
Mostly Russian ones, yeah, I think. Okay. So you were
A View to a Kill, I think it was.
Okay, could be. Yeah, The Living Daylights is one of the Timothy Dalton ones. I don't remember which one. I think that's 87-ish, somewhere in the late 80s is when Dalton took over.
When was A View to a Kill or whatever?
That's 85, but that's Roger Moore, so I got the whole list up here.
Oh, okay.
But fair enough. So you were a big Bond fan, and at some point you kind of grew up and stopped loving the movies as much, or at least not loving Roger Moore.
Yeah, well, they're good for kids. You got the cool gadgets, you got the well-dressed dude, and you get all the ladies.
Okay, yeah. So for me, James Bond, there's two entry points for me with James Bond. First one is GoldenEye. So I'm 13-ish when that comes out. I remember seeing it in the theater, remember loving it. And then there's the N64 game.
Yeah.
That just was the biggest game I ever played, it nonstop, all the time, loved it. And so that's my Bond. And the other entry point is Austin Powers, which I think is right around that same time.
Mm-hmm.
And, parodying all these old Bond movies. So I had gone back and seen some of them, most of the ones from GoldenEye, the Odd Job and Jaws, which I think those are all Roger Moore characters, right? If I remember correctly.
Jaws is for sure. I thought Odd Job was...
I think Jaws and Odd Job are in the same movie, aren't they?
I thought Oddjob was Goldfinger. But
you're right. He is in Goldfinger. You're right. He's the one throws the hat, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You honestly, you fight like a woman.
Yeah. random task, right?
Yes. <That's>, Who throws a shoe?
Right. That's right. Yeah. So I'd seen Goldfinger and then, you know, Goldmember. But it's funny. Watch. I'd never seen this one before from Meshavatov. Right. This is the like kind of the miss one. Have I seen Thunderball? That's the one. Actually, I don't know if I've seen several of the Connery movies. Anyways. But yeah, so many things from this movie were ripped directly from Goldeneye ripped directly from this movie. You know, and it's kind of a hilarious, like the bring in the Fembots, like that lady is basically,
exactly.
You know, the Russian lady in this movie is essentially the same character.
Oh yeah.
Obviously Dr. Evil stroking the cat, but that guy isn't that guy in Dr. No also?
Blofeld. Yeah. He's a recurring villain in the Bond universe. Yeah. He's in the new ones too.
Well, Spectre is a recurring.
Right. Yeah, they're one of the bad foes. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't
they just called him number one though, right?
In this one, he's number one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't the guy from Django? Isn't he Blofeld or something?
Waltz, yes.
Waltz. Yep, yes. He is. Okay, that's right. So he's basically playing the same character.
Yeah, I mean, the lore does not all match, nor should they try to make it match. I mean, it gets wonky. This one is sort of a continuation, and they reference Dr. No, so it's sort of, like, continuous, but at some point they kind of just say, fuck it, and they all do their own thing, and then they have these, like, loose narrative connections sometimes. So
yeah, one, they wanted revenge for Dr. No or something like that, because he's a Spectre guy.
Yeah, he's one of their agents.
Yeah, the plot's kind of convoluted, right?
I didn't get it till very late in the movie. Like, yeah. Then it all fell into place eventually, but I was like, I don't know what the hell's happening.
For the longest time, I was just trying to figure out who Robert Shaw is and who is he working for? What is he doing? I mean, he's cool. He's a cool villain. And Robert Shaw's the man. I think he's like a top five actor for me at this point. Like every movie he's in, I just love that guy. Super great.
He's good.
But yeah, so he's not Spectre. He's sort of hired by Spectre.
He works for Spectre, I think.
He's an assassin.
But it wasn't his plan, right? He's just
he's a soldier functionally in Spectre, but he's not the brains. Although, I mean,
in the movie starts where he strangles James Bond, and you're like, oh wow, how's that James Bond? And then the mask thing. That was the other thing, is like the Mission Impossible pulling off the mask, total ripoff from this movie. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah, I like the opening. I did think, like, okay, you were having this guy pretend to be Bond. Why did you bother making the mask if you knew the guy was
going to be Bond? Why does he need to have the mask?
Yeah. What's the point? I mean, obviously, they wanted to make it dramatic. Oh, my gosh, did Sean Connery just die? Like, is this Psycho again where we kill the protagonist? No.
Well, he doesn't want to be distracted by his beautiful looks.
It's true. He is very sexually charismatic. I mean, it's almost like he's a mutant with superpowers.
You have to be able to get over that hurdle of wanting to make love to him instead of strangling him.
He's apparently so wanted that the entire plot was to pretend that this woman who's just obsessed with him, who like needs to have sex with James Bond and knows everything about him, and like that's a plausible like plan.
Literally, it's she like, just shows up naked in his bed at the hotel.
It was like, I love you, James Bond. I know everything. I know where your scar is on your body. Like, bone me, Bond. And he does. He's like, all right.
Let's do it. And, of course, he was filmed the whole time. He didn't know
kind of knows he's being tricked, but he's like, whatever, okay.
Oh, yeah, and he throws a trap, and he's like, well, I can't help it. I know this is a honeypot, but
okay, but the thing I wanted to talk about, we kind of mentioned it before we started, was when James Bond gets the call, he's on a boat. Like making out with this lady, and he gets like a page. Do they have pagers back in the
60s? No,
it was some sort of.
Yeah, it was a fancy, rare technology in the early 60s. Cool spy tech.
And then a car phone, apparently, that he had also. I didn't know they had those in the 1960s. But the part I love about it is he's like supposed to be working. Like it's the middle of the workday and they're like, where the fuck are you? And he's like,
you're not in the office. We didn't see you at the water cooler this morning.
Right. So it's because I was on a boat banging some lady. Like, what do you want? I got here when you called.
Leave me the fuck alone.
Imagine your boss calling you. Like, where are you, Ben? Like, wow, fuck, I'll be there. Just let me finish up.
Wait, I need
give me an hour.
No, actually make it an hour and a half. All right. I'll see you in an hour and a half. Just get off my nuts. I'll be there in an hour and a half.
they're all waiting for him to get there. It's like, oh, finally showed up, huh? It's like, yeah, I had to finish some business. And they heard the other end of the call. They knew what he was doing.
Yeah, they actually listened to it. That's how pervy this movie is.
I know.
Like, they get the intel, and then they're like, we're going to just keep listening to what's happening.
I actually loved it. I think it's great. Loved this movie. Very much enjoyed it. Super fun. But yeah, the plot. So then the Russians are really pawns in the whole thing, right?
Yes, they didn't. Yes. Yep. So Turkey is like the playground where, like, the U.S.
Cool setting, by the way. Very cool setting. Sure. I thought it looked Istanbul. Cool. Must be a cool place.
It was sure. It was, you know, there's the Russians and then the British, and they're fighting over whether it's going to be capital or communist. And the goal is to get them to fight each other and blame each other and escalate the conflict. And then Spectre gets to sit back and say, like, they're exhausting themselves and their resources. And
isn't Spectre all former British spies?
It's all over. They're from every country. Oh, okay. It's a private organization under Blofeld or number ones. Yeah, so the number one, the number three, like the henchmen, like, fighting to not be killed in some cartoonish way. And then, like, they're just all sweating, like, towards the end. It's like, oh, this is so goofy.
I'm very badly hurt.
I'm still alive. You can get me medical attention. I think I'll be fine. Oh, you shot me. Why did you shoot me? I've been burned and I've been shot. Well, yeah, the plot, I mean, the movie is very silly. I mean, it is a deeply silly movie. It is very incomprehensible because I didn't understand the lady in Turkey who falls in love with James. She's just acting because she likes Russia. She's doing what Russia wants her to do. Right? That's what she thinks.
Like Tatiana, that lady?
Sure, Tanya. Yes.
Yeah, at first. But then she actually does fall for him.
Well, sure. She was tricked, right? So,
yeah.
Right, but what does she think she's doing and why?
She thinks she's tricking James Bond.
But, like, but for why? For what purpose? Because for Russia, right? Because she thinks it's in Russia's interest?
Right. The bring in the fembots, that lady, told her basically that Mother Russia needs her to make Bond, you know, think she's in love with her, so they can get close and then kill him. Then they're going to kill him. That's all she knows.
Right.
But then she falls in love with him and doesn't want James Bond.
Catches feelings very quickly. I mean, in the span of 2 days. Basically, she's just deeply in love with him. It's just so absurd, based on nothing really. But it's, I mean, this movie is just this, like, ridiculous.
Well, she's fantasy. A spy. I mean, she's enlisted as a Russian spy. Essentially, she works for the consulate, and they're like, come, you know, we need you to be a spy and help us trick this.
Oh, I get that. It's the falling in love instantly that was like,
this James fucking Bond.
I understand. It's an absurd little, like, fantasy. It's ludicrous.
No, it's not. It's awesome. And it's cool. And I wish I lived in a world where that existed.
Where women would just be horned up and fall in love after just 2 days.
Spies, yeah.
Well, spies existed. I don't know that. Well, they fell in love with each other so quickly.
Her instructions were to sleep with him. That was what the lady said.
Yeah, like, you can sleep with somebody and not love them and fall in love with him. At least I believe. I don't think it's too guaranteed. Right. He's so incredible that this is just such a gratifying experience. This is so incredible. I want to keep doing this.
you know what's funny to me? I was thinking about James Bond in general, like the character. You know, he's kind of effeminate. At least the Sean Connery version of it, right? He's, like, very well-dressed and super thin and well-kept. And, like, you kind of think of James Bond as, like, a manly man. But he's really not. He's, like,
He's very cultured and, like, upper class.
He's like a prince, kind of.
Lord Fauntleroy kind of type, yeah.
Right, yeah. I just found that interesting.
No, it's true.
He's also, like, you know, aggressive with women and takes what he wants, you know.
Is that another thing you wish happened?
Daniel Craig changed things up from the effeminate side. He kind of brought a different energy to the role.
Yeah, he gets dirty and beat up and bloody and you know, throws himself through walls and stuff. Yeah, it's a different vibe. So when you asked about Bond, so I liked all the Pierce Brosnan movies. I think I saw everyone in the theater, and I think Casino Royale is probably my favorite. The Bond movies. I think Daniel Craig, like you're talking about, like, came in and he nails suave, but he's also like he's got an edge. He seems kind of crazy. Those version of the Bond movies into like Skyfall. I think Skyfall's like probably the second best one. Maybe
Skyfall's my favorite. It's the ones I've seen. I think Skyfall's incredible.
But actually, Spectre I think is the worst one. That's the sequel to. That's the second one, isn't it? Spectre.
No, Quantum of Solace is so forgettable. That's the second one. That one is.
One of them is Spectre, though, right? Isn't
that the fourth one? All right, I think that's the one. It starts with a really, really great sequence in like Mexico City during Dia de los Muertos.
That's Sam Mendes. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it looks great, but yeah, it didn't quite work.
Yeah, I mean, Craig's I think only in two good Bond movies.
Sure.
Because No Time to Die, the most recent one, I thought was pretty bad. Like, didn't care for it a whole lot.
I haven't seen it.
I won't say the spoiler alert. Then there's.
It's the last one. Okay. I'll see it at some point.
But I'm a big fan of the Daniel Craig. His version of Bond, I like. It's also one of the few where they carry things over, like plot lines. But it made it seem more realistic. Like, we're talking about how Bond in these versions seems so implausible. Like, it does seem like a fantasy world.
It is, and it's cartoonish, and it gets sillier. Although, watching Sean Connery in this, he almost seems to be joking his way through it. He seems to almost not be taking it seriously. Like, he's just kind of on the verge of busting a gut every scene.
Yeah, he's got a shit smirk every time.
He's like, this is so silly and stupid. He's just laughing, like, whatever.
What did he say after they shot the guy that was hanging out the mouth? Something like... something on the lips or something. I can't remember what it was that he said. Some smirky line after he killed a guy.
Oh, yeah. And then there's one time where it got a little bit serious towards the very end. Right? Like, we think we get the, like, final scare. Like, for the most part, the action's over, but then he's in the hotel room, and Fraulein or whatever, like, whatever that woman, the Russian woman, shows up. And she's, like, holding a gun, and she's, of course, she waits to shoot him, because everybody waits to shoot Bond. Nobody just shoots us in the fucking face and moves on. They like to just... He's so attractive.
I have a gun. I can just go shoot him.
That's what I'm thinking of Robert Shaw. Like, okay, you're listening to him because you could just kill him.
Right.
That'd be done. Now you want these gold sovereigns for some reason. Yeah.
I'll tell you my whole plan, and then I'll take your little coins, and then I'll open up your... Yeah.
Like, okay, this is really, really stupid. But he seems scared for a second, and then he gets saved by the woman because the woman loves him so much and loves him more than she loves Russia, tackles the woman, and he has a look of, like, concern, and he's actually stressed and, like, traumatized for the first time in the movie, despite almost dying a bunch of times and constantly having people on the verge of killing him. There's one time where he's like, okay, you can turn the serious notch a little bit. It was there, but... I guess you didn't feel the need to use it in the other sequences, or were told not to. It's so goofy. I don't know. I've only seen the Living Daylights. There's only two Timothy Dalton ones. I always felt bad for Timothy Dalton. I felt like he was stuck in a Roger Moore Bond movie, and he was also like could do the serious Bond, but that wasn't where the Bond movies were at. So I always felt bad. He had to be like riding on a cello case down a hill, and it just gets
aggressively goofy. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
He was doing a serious take. He could have done it. He had the stern, stoic like look. And the Lazenby one's so weird because he's in love and his like wife dies. He gets married and is just like bizarre. But anyway, this movie though is full on spy fantasy in the midst of Cold War. And the settings and the gadgets were nonsense in a fun way. I mean, they have to go underground to get to the little like periscope thing so they can spy on the Russian embassy. And the opening with the guy playing chess, you know, and he's just sitting there, and then he gets the little message underneath his water glass, and he has to leave. It's the right amount of camp and silliness, but just a little bit of seriousness that makes it work. But can we talk about the gypsy sequence? You love this movie.
The belly dancing.
It was to me, I wasn't bored by it, but it was to me the worst part of the movie because it felt so needless. And also, you could tell we were in an actual like set. It just felt like a studio lot. It did not feel like we were on location or anywhere real.
But you get a super cool shootout.
So the shootout really? You thought it was super cool?
It felt like a Western for a little bit. It like kicked into old like spaghetti Western for a minute.
What about the cat fight that went on for like 15 minutes?
Even better.
Okay.
I'm all for that.
We're sitting there like, is this what gypsies were like? Is this, I don't know what to make of this. And I was like, yeah, it's kind of pointless. But he just needed to keep drinking and we needed to just set up that he
was gonna survive. It's a bit of a filler.
It felt like filler. And see, the shootout was less exciting because it just seemed... the visual effects didn't work. It wasn't great special effects. It felt kind of corny and not a good way.
Why did Robert Shaw kill the... didn't he save Bond?
Well, he needed Bond to steal the lectern thing.
Oh, that's right. Goal. That's right. He does need him to steal the it's like a code breaker type thing.
Is that what it was? But I mean, stealing it, doesn't it? Wouldn't they just stop using the code? Use different codes? I don't know. And Spectre just wanted to sell it back to the Russians. That was ultimately Spectre's plan. Or did I catch that correctly?
Yeah, you did. Yep.
It's like, what? So you wanted to steal it and then just charge them money to give it back to them, so that you could be even richer. See, yeah, there are so many moments that made me think of...
they need to fund their operation somehow.
I guess, aren't they super rich already? Yeah. You can't
overthrow governments for free, Ben. It's not free.
This made me think of Austin Powers. Like,
oh, sure.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I won $1 million. Like, we control hundreds of billions of dollars of industry. What? Like, he doesn't even need the money? I'll just hold the world for ransom. They're like, oh, okay. It's just like, this is so goofy that this is the ultimate goal, and they have a poison. Oh, 12 seconds. We'll have to make an even better one. 12 seconds is too long to wait for somebody to die. I mean, it's fun. That's the camp you want from something.
It's fun. Silly as this.
It's very stupid, but fun.
She should have kept her mouth shut. That's what he says when he shoots the guy. The
Russian that comes out of the woman's mouth. I mean, just this movie is dripping.
She
with
should
sex
have kept her
everywhere.
Mouth
like literally, wait for this guy to crawl out of this like woman's mouth. Just ludicrous.
We need more horny movies. We don't have enough horny movies, I think.
I'm telling you, this is everything in a porno, but like the explicit sex scenes. I mean, literally, you could add 5 easy to this, just fine. You just plug them in and keep the plot, everything else exactly the same. And you'd be fine. And it would just work, and nothing would change other than you just have explicit sex, which feels like what this movie really wanted. Because we don't go more than like...
like full penetration, you think, is what they wanted?
I'm saying you could do that if you wanted to make a porno. Sure, maybe. And I try to think about this in the early 60s, right? I mean, you think of... everybody thinks of like the clean-cut 50s, buttoned up, Leave It to Beaver. Well, shucks, Dad. And everything's just... yeah, everybody's in suits. This had to be one of the most like explicit movies, mainstream movies.
So a lot of blood too, a lot of blood and killing. I mean, the one guy gets shot; he's got blood in his arm. Robert Shaw.
I could see the back. I could see him with his hand. I could see him do the like blood splatter on his arm. I was like, oh boy, okay. I saw how that was done. It was graphic in all kinds of ways. But like literally, you just get tons of shots of just cleavage, just breathing up and down. Like, oh. This wasn't an American movie, and I wonder if I don't know if this had trouble with the censors or they just think it's fine. I don't know. It's like fascinating. This would have been insane. You know, this would have been. I don't think there's anything like it in a mainstream movie up to this point in the U.S. or U.K. I mean, I don't know.
This is a gigantic hit, though.
Oh,
it was made a $2 million budget, made like 78, 80 million worldwide.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, this is a big one.
They doubled the budget from Dr. No from $1 million to $2 million.
And it became clear, like, oh, this is a thing. This is a cultural thing now. People need Bond movies, and we've had them ever since. I mean, I didn't like the gypsy scene mostly because I just thought the action was bad, but the movie picked up for me considerably. Basically, when Robert Shaw confronts James Bond to the very end, that's to me where the movie really amps up and gets
the train,
really fun.
The train stuff's good.
Yeah, at the train, trying to get the drug woman off, and then being pursued, fighting the guy, the helicopter stuff, the helicopter sequence, into the boat sequence, like, oh, this is superb. Like, this is great.
Yeah, that's great.
This is where it really, really got excited, because it seemed kind of corny and campy mostly. And up till that, it was mostly just sex and silliness that kind of pushed things forward. And then finally, like, okay, now we're ramping it up.
More of this espionage spy stuff in that, which involves boning. I mean, if you're a spy, you got to bone.
Yeah, if there are any experienced spies, we'd love to know about how many times you had to just sleep with random people as part of your job. I suspect it's less than in James Bond movies. I suspect it doesn't happen as often as frequently. I mean, James Bond has sex. How many women does James Bond have sex with in this movie?
Good question. Good question. The two gypsy women, for sure. Tatiana.
The one in the beginning, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think I have four. Mm-hmm. He never actually gets with Moneypenny in the movie that we can tell?
No. I don't think so. I mean, he kisses her. That doesn't count.
I mean, that's a serious HR violation.
Yeah. In the workplace. Yeah.
They get really hot and heavy.
Was there another one when he was in Turkey?
I don't think so.
Okay, so that was a dry spell for him.
Poor guy, he had to go a full day or something?
The gypsy camp was in Turkey, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was outside the outskirts of Istanbul or whatever, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, two at a time. You know, he's a day off after that. You gotta pace yourself a little bit.
I guess.
And they were all sad to see him go. They were like, no, James, don't leave.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he call up the queen and queen mom, I gotta put in my retirement papers, I'm staying in Turkey.
Well, if the movie wanted to have a sense of humor, like, he leaves and then they start fighting over James Bond and then they just redo the fight at the end again. Oh, like, we're back in the same spot.
Comedy gold. Why did they not think of that, Ben?
Like, I don't know. He wanted to be fun, you know, he wanted to save them, and I guess seeing them fight to the death again would have been a buzzkill, I suppose. Just outlandish, like, mud fight.
This movie also...
He brought peace to the women there in the gypsy camp.
This movie has that just cool-ass ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding.
They leaned it a bit too heavy for a while. Like, it was blasting too much and too long too often early on.
He walks into just a empty room, and it's...
He goes to the hotel to check in, and it's blasting as he's talking to the clerk, and he goes in. He's looking for spy stuff.
Completely disagree. Okay. Turn it up, volume up on that. I'll turn it
too
to 11. No.
Save it. It's great, but you got to use it sparingly. Yeah. You have to pick your spots.
They learn that in later movies.
Like,
instead of just filling time with the music, they actually use it with good effect.
What you guys don't realize is I'm just going to have that play over and over this entire podcast while we're talking.
It'll make it better, especially if you can make it impossibly irresistible.
Ba-na-da-da! All day.
I was like, this is dramatic. There's nothing dramatic happening. He's just walking around. Sean, we need you to just walk around. You're just looking for, like, spy stuff. Just look over and see if there's, like, hidden cameras and stuff. We're just going to blare the music. Don't worry. You can say whatever you want. We're just going to blast music over the top.
You were talking about, like, how they pump these movies out. 62, Dr. No, 63 for Much With Love, 64, Goldfinger, 65, Thunderball, 2 years later, 67, You Only Live Twice. Those are the Sean Connery. Talk about dry spell, there was only 1 year gap, 66. What happened in 66? Otherwise, it was every year there was a new Bond movie.
Yeah, Sean Connery's probably pretty busy. And then he comes back and does Never Say Never Again in, like, the early 80s. That's a weird one.
It's not really an official...
It is an official one. It's not a...
Diamonds Are Forever. He doesn't say
anyone. I thought there was one more. Never Say Never Again is 83, but it wasn't an official one. He did it. I don't know. He had the rights to it. I don't know what the deal is. There's something weird with that one. But yes, Diamonds Are Forever is another one. And then we go to Roger Moore. At some point, the movies just get campier and sillier. I mean, it just gets pretty goofy. Once they figure out the formula, when did they start, like, not making nearly as much money?
Good question. Well, the Craig movies all did fairly well. They didn't remove Craig as Bond because of sales. It was just he didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, he's getting old, and it's a lot of work to do action movies. But on Her Majesty's Secret Service, is that like the late 60s, right? Because they went to Lazenby, and that movie was a struggle, and then they paid, I think, Sean Connery a ton of money to come back and do another one.
He only did one, yeah.
They're like, hey, look, we need to set the ship right. Here's a bunch of money, Sean, come back. We'll do one last Bond movie, Diamonds Are Forever. And then they
got I've the never movie seen that one. Wait, is that the one with the skiing? There's a bunch of skiing in it? No?
There's multiple skiing ones, I think.
Yeah, they paid Connery $1.25 million which is more than the budget of the first movie.
Yeah.
Like 6 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like, we need you to come back because the Lazenby was a failure.
Or didn't 9 years later, I guess. Yeah. Crazy. It's inflation.
I mean, 1.25 is a lot of money in 1971.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of cheddar. That buys a lot of stuff. Is Craig, Eric, this is for you. Is Craig now your favorite Bond? Or would you say it's Dalton? Or not Dalton, Brosnan.
Brosnan's probably... Oh, man. He to me, is the most Bond-ish.
Oh, like, interesting.
He's the most... Okay. Although now that I'm watching a few more Connery ones, Connery's kind of starting to grow on me as Bond. Connery seems like kind of an asshole.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
Which is surprising to me because I love Sean Connery. He's one of my all-time favorite actors. But, like, you know, I think of him from, I don't know, The Rock or Indiana Jones or whatever. And, like, he always seems like a fun guy, kind of tough, but not an asshole. Although he is kind of a jerk in a lot of those movies. I don't know. Maybe I'm not thinking of him correctly. But
that's kind of iffy.
James Bond just seems like a piece of shit. It, like, as Connery, and like, you wouldn't want to be around him, you'd hate him, but he's kind of fun to watch be a piece of shit. kind of like Larry David, you know. It's like, God, I would not want to know him, he would drive me fucking crazy, but it's kind of fun to watch him just be an asshole to everybody.
A little bit. I mean, to me, with, like, Brosnan, I always never felt like he's a guy that could throw down. Like,
right. He can't throw hands.
It was like, you talk about the sort of high-strung fussiness, like Timothy Dalton seemed, or God, Brosnan, it's like he couldn't do it, like, really. Sean Connery feels like he could ultimately fight, and I like the fighting he does here is kind of awkward and a good struggle. I like the fight he has with Robert Shaw. I mean, like, yeah, that was where the movie got fun. Like, oh, that felt like a real fight, kind of. It was a struggle. It wasn't super slick or coordinated, and they were just it was just really gritty and fun and worked and dramatic. I feel like Sean Connery can straddle the line between I'm going to do the silly, and also I seem like somebody who could actually kind of do some of this stuff. Roger Moore doesn't seem like a guy. I don't know. And I've only seen some of the later ones. It doesn't seem like he could really throw down. Craig seems like he could throw down. But so, I mean, Kevin, you're older now. After much reevaluation, what's your favorite Bond? Where does it rank? Where are you at with, well, I guess Roger Moore specifically, but the whole.
Well, Roger Bond Moore, action. His movies were more cartoonish and silly.
Oh yeah.
And I think as a little kid, that was awesome.
Sure.
But I really was impressed with Daniel Craig. Casino Royale is one of my favorites. I was never into Pierce Brosnan. He never did anything for me. Sure. So Sean Connery, he's up there. He's probably my second favorite Bond now.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got a certain manliness to him.
Right.
You mentioned the Dalton, or you mentioned how they were always on TV. It seemed like the Dalton ones were just on TNT. All the time, like, yeah, cable TV, over and over and over again.
And I don't remember this being on cable, but this is a movie that would have probably bored me too much as a kid. I needed more, like, weirdness and artifice. I needed, like, you needed to be mutant turtles or, like, in space or, like, dragon monster people. Like, oh, you're just people doing stuff? Boring. Definitely more fun now when you look at it. I mean, it is, like... It is something that would work in some ways better when you're younger because it is just juvenile in a fun way. I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way, but it is, like, fundamentally, like, almost like a teenage boy's version of what, like, spying and being a hero is. Like, you're in danger, but never really that much danger. You've always got the solution. You never lose your cool, really. I mean, the Bond is never upset or stressed, really. And women want you all the time. I mean, just walk anywhere. And they're just, their engines revved up. They're ready. It's part of the fun. And then, yeah, I mean, because the gadgets don't get too crazy. It was like, I almost thought we were going to go, we'd get the scene with the suitcase and how it has all these little, like, intricacies and little tricks that they can do. And I was like, waiting, when are we going to get the payoff? We got that in Act 1.
Chekhov's suitcase.
Right, finally. in a pretty silly way, we get the payoff, but it took a while. We don't have any car chase sequences really yet. I think that starts to come as we get the Aston Martin in the next one, I think, if I remember correctly.
Goldfinger? Yeah, I think he has the Aston Martin Goldfinger. Goldfinger's no. great.
That's the one I saw because it was, I think, the most well-known of the of the Connery Bonds, so I watched it. It's also ludicrous, and that's one where James Bond does almost nothing. The only thing he does in that movie is convinces Pussy Galore to go turncoat by the end. Otherwise, James Bond doesn't impact anything. He's just kind of along for the ride. Kind of like Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark, really. Doesn't do a ton. It's one thing, sort of, but otherwise doesn't really impact. He's just discovering stuff. It's a great villain, right? That's the thing. The villain's pretty fun. Robert Shaw, he's kind of indiscreet this time. He's there. He's this looming presence. But it's not – we don't have a ton. And it's not Robert Shaw. We just don't know enough about him. He just wants to kill James Bond. And then I didn't understand why he wanted money at the end. I didn't quite understand it. Other than just he wanted to prove how better he was than James Bond. Oh, I won this round.
Well, theoretically, if he's just a hired assassin, it's all right, well, you want to pay me more? You know? I guess it didn't seem that implausible.
So the other British agent had an exact same suitcase as James Bond had? Is that what happened? Because there were two suitcases at the end.
Yeah, I think so. I think where he's it's a standard kit, and then they all have...
Oh, yeah, so he must have stolen it from the agent that he killed.
Yeah, the British agent.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, because it wasn't Bond's case that had the tear gas that was open, right? Because Bond's case had been opened earlier with the money in it.
Yeah.
You're right. Huh, I didn't catch that. Good catch. Yeah,
it's a big elaborate setup, because he's got to, open it the first time and show him where the gold's armor is, and then he's got to trick Robert Shaw into opening the second case, in this bizarre little chess match that they got going on.
It's cool. I liked it. Kevin... I can't get a sense if you disliked it. I'm kind of feeling you didn't enjoy it all that much, but.
Oh, well, I enjoyed it. But it wasn't my favorite Bond movie, not by a long shot. I was confused by the plot. At one point I thought I missed something, and so I rewound it, and then it turns out I didn't miss anything at all. I just didn't catch what was going on.
Yeah.
And the other part that bugged me a lot was all the Austin Powers references that came up every time I saw Rosa Klebb or Number One, Number Three. That was all so Austin Powersy that I couldn't get over that for whatever reason. I don't know why this movie made it more... was more pronounced anyway for me.
I think there is a lot that Mike Myers cribbed from this movie and then the first two, three Bonds really. So I was there with you. It switched for me when we got to the final act and the final extended action sequences where there's okay, this was really silly. I was kind of laughing semi at the movie because it was so ridiculous. And then it's okay, all right. Finally, this is the big payoff. We're having a ton of fun.
What year was North by Northwest? Was that
59?
Okay.
I did think of that with the helicopter sequence.
Helicopter
scene. It took from that. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
A little Hitchcockian.
And just the bay being lit on fire, all these stunt guys jumping into the water. It's all right, this is good. I mean, this is it's stunt work and practical effects, but it's way more exciting and interesting than stupid CGI. It's all right, this is chaos. Doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense. He's we have enough fuel to make it to Venice, and then they dump all the fuel. So I guess they still stop somewhere to get fuel, I guess. We just don't worry about the fuel. It's gone. Whatever. Logic isn't...
How lucky that the boat they took had all that fuel on it.
Oh, yeah. It was ready to go, yeah.
And it was shot by bullets but didn't explode, but then easily exploded later.
Yeah, with one shot, just... the entire water body erupts. And the guy who was there to do the pickup just I don't know, it was like three's a crowd or whatever they said when they pushed him in the water. This is so stupid. Like, they're on the boat, and they have the guy who's tied up, and then they push him up, can you swim? Like, oh, goodness.
I like the little lines. I don't know.
I like them, too. They're goofy as hell.
Not enough of that in the more recent Bonds.
Well, they took everything serious. They wanted to get rid of
it. They got very serious, yes. The Bond movies got way too serious, I think.
Okay. Well, this movie ultimately, in the end, it won me over because it was able to, like, okay, if you're going to have that kind of effects, we're going to do this, then I can kind of just forgive that this is patently ludicrous every step of the way. I mean, every sequence is just like, every time he's on it, like, this is so nonsensical. They know it's a trap, but the British can't resist. They want that lecture. Okay. This is just fun nonsense, and then it got really, really fun to the end. Yeah, it's tough. I haven't seen enough of them to rank them all. But I like pretty much every Connery Bond better than every Roger Moore one. I don't know. Roger Moore ones, they get so cartoony that there's no way in. I feel like it's almost Looney Tunes Spy Edition.
Yeah,
like I don't have any Moonraker I've
he
seen.
Goes to the moon, as I recall.
Yep.
That is pretty
That's
silly.
The one with Jaws, isn't it? Isn't Moonraker the one with Jaws?
Jaws is in several of the Roger Moore ones. He's in multiple ones. Okay. He's at least two or three. Yeah, is Moonraker the one where, like, the villain's goal is to create, like, just a new Aryan race?
Yeah.
They seem where, like, they have a shuttle and there's just all these, like, beautiful young white people. He's going to create a new race after destroying the planet.
They chose Moonraker because of the rise of the science fiction genre in the wake of Star Wars. So that's why they mean Moonraker.
Yeah. Yep, and it's goofy. I mean, here, like, Ian Fleming's just pulling from, like, the Cold War and is trying to at least be vaguely plausible spy stuff, but they keep, like, escalating the villains and having to have them more wacky and insane.
Have you ever read a James Bond novel?
No. Have you?
No, I should, though. It better be fun.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I was reading Wikipedia, and it said it was JFK's, one of his favorite books was From Russia with Love.
Really?
Yeah. And this was the last movie he saw before he was assassinated.
No way. Oh.
Good old Wikipedia.
Well, JFK's got a little bit of James Bond to him, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Take care of business, bone some broads, you know?
Run the country.
Real hero, you know, was he a spy? Who knows?
Nobody utilized some, you know.
Cool.
Well, what else should we say about From Russia with Love?
Are you cruising for a piece of Osh?
Does he say that?
It's from Highlander, but it is Sean Connery.
Oh, God. I was like, I don't think he said
one of my all-time favorite lines in the history of a movie is Sean Connery saying that in Highlander.
What a movie, Highlander. Yeah. He plays like a Spanish guy as a Scottish, as a Scotsman.
Ridiculous.
He plays the Spaniard.
R.I.P. Sean Connery.
Yeah.
He's great a legend. Actor.
Oh, yeah.
Absolute legend. Favorite Sean Connery movie?
I mean, that's going to be The Last Crusade for me if you say, what's my favorite? I'm not saying this is quote-unquote best. But the one that matters the most to me is that movie, by far. What about you?
Untouchables? Untouchables, The Rock, Hunt for
Untouchables,
October.
Untouchables, he won an Oscar for, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's very good in Untouchables. He's like a tough guy in that movie.
Yeah.
Real badass.
You should say his line in that one. That's it. Put one in the hospital, we put one in the morgue or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. When did he die? Not that long ago, right? 2020. Yeah. Died on Halloween.
Okay.
COVID year. Right. That's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think the last movie he saw before he went?
His final on-screen appearance was in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, well. Now that is one of his worst movies.
I saw that in the theater. I liked it.
Yeah. I saw it in theater, and I did not like it.
I didn't hate it, but I forgot about it almost completely. There was like nothing there. It was just a big bowl of nothing.
Yeah.
It was pretty stupid.
There's one of his movies that I really want to see. Is it The Man Who Would Be King?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen that. That's supposed to be really great.
Yeah, that's been on my to-watch list for a while, too.
What's that one about?
So Michael Caine's in it, right?
John Huston movie, yeah. Two British soldiers?
Yeah, I think they...
Both actors regarded as their favorite film.
Wow.
I think they try to be a king somewhere in Africa. They try to have some sort of royalty or deification or something.
The one I want to see is Zardoz. I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. I mean, its reputation precedes it as a silly movie.
Yeah, he's got like a ponytail and wears a little bikini.
Here's a fun fact. Never Say Never, the one that he came back for. He broke his wrist during the filming of it by the fight choreographer, one Steven Seagal.
Oh, jeez.
That's a fun fact.
Like he was practicing stunt work with Steven Seagal and his wrist got broken?
It was just plagued by one of the production problems, which was him breaking his wrist. It doesn't say how. It was broken by fight choreographer Steven Seagal.
Okay. So I'm going to assume that they were like practicing fighting.
Yeah.
And Steven Seagal, he's so tough and such a badass and so powerful. He accidentally broke John Connery's wrist, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's so tough and awesome.
Real life spy. Real life.
Russian spy. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't have a whole lot to say. I like it. I recommend it. It's a good movie. I give it four stars, four and a half. Four. I'll give it four stars.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll give it three stars. I thought the plot was confusing. There was it was a lot of gratuitous whatever.
it was gratuitous. Extremely.
Yeah, extremely gratuitous. I don't know. He strikes a woman. He strikes Tanya for some reason.
Well, he didn't realize. He assumed she knew more, that she was doing spy stuff. It's like, this guy's dead. Like his Turkish buddy dies, right? And he's like, what is this?
Ali. He
manhandles her a lot too. Lots of grabbing and pushing her.
Yeah. Doesn't feel great.
Yeah, that made me feel a little dirty. But all in all, I agree with the fight scenes. The fight scenes in the train are really good.
With a license to kill, so.
And a license to thrill.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Prosecute him?
Yeah.
Good luck.
Prosecute his ghost.
I guess that license is could be international, could it?
Do you have to renew that, you think? Like at the DMV?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's only good in Britain, though.
See, there's a sketch idea. He's got to wait in line at the DMV to renew his license to kill. Oh, doesn't have the right form.
It's just comedy gold, right?
And he's like, I'm going to kill you. Well, your license is expired. You can't kill me.
I have three forms of ID.
Sorry, sir,
you need a printed copy of your address.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's bullshit.
Well, I have my utility bills right here.
Can you just get me the... Oh, well, why won't this work? This is needless bureaucracy. I hate this.
Would you like to go out back?
Well, what could I persuade you if I showed you my penis? It was Chris Parnell was the doctor. I don't remember who the guy was, but somebody's playing James Bond. And the doctor's like, sir, you have several STDs. And he has to go through and like start calling every woman he's sex with. You know, it's a massive list. Sorry, you better check it. I've got an STD. Just nonsense.
I mean,
you can just do a group text for that.
Sure.
But it really changed his whole way about doing business. That's probably why they're so less horny now. Bond can't just run around in the throes. He would pick up something, especially in some, like,
well, this is what happens. This is what happens in Austin Powers. Like, it's the 90s. Like, it's not the swinging 60s anymore. Like,
right.
I mean, it's like, I mean, there was plenty to spoof because this is ludicrous. I mean, this is absurd. And this is why I think a lot of us bars is just, we're going to do basically the plot of a James Bond movie, but it's just going to be silly. I give it a 4. It won me over ultimately. I could go 3.5. It's got problems. The gypsy sequence really didn't work for me. I thought it actually derailed the momentum. It wasn't really spy stuff. It was a silly action sequence that didn't hold up. I just kept thinking of the guy literally smacking the blood back and rubbing it on his arms. Like, okay. It's like, okay, that maybe we need another take, but maybe you didn't have another prop or what. I don't know. Like, that needed another go, I think. On that, just the gratuitous extended tie. Like, okay, I probably could have done something a little more interesting. Give me more of the villains or something.
More Robert Shaw.
Sure. Sure. And it was like, it would have been more like that 3 up until that very last, like from the train on. Then I was like, oh, okay. Okay. Here we go. This is the good stuff. This is the stuff that's really, really fun. I got back up there. But, it could be less. This is not profoundly great stuff. This is deeply silly. But it was fun. Had a good time.
Why couldn't they just ride the train to England?
Because of customs. Couldn't get the thing through customs, right? So,
but I don't know what... freaking British spy. Why would they stop James Bond?
Well, they don't know who he is. That's not like a random customs officer or TSA agent's like, oh, you're James Bond. You can take whatever you want. But it's like, oh, excuse me, sir, what are you trying to declare? What's this?
Well, Bond, can I make a phone call? This,
and we have to escalate it. But he didn't have access to a phone. He tried to do that, right? He was going to have somebody from Britain smuggle him away, and they did that eventually when they got to Italy. But he was going to hit some country where, like, they weren't going to do business with him. They were going to, like, wasn't going to work out. That was fine. Of all the nonsense, okay, yeah, you can't, you have to get off the train. At some point, then you won't be able to get the lectern through customs. Okay. It's fine. You don't have a cell phone. You can't say, beep, 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 send somebody on this train right now. I've got it. Come fly in.
Why didn't he have a cell phone?
Good question. Everybody's got a cell phone. I don't know why he didn't.
He had a pager and a freaking car phone. Bring that shit with him.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, it's fun. It's silly. I mean, people know what they're getting with James Bond. I don't think it's any mystery, like, especially because I'm trying to remember, but I think this is literally the horniest one that I've seen. Like, it's not. It's so explicit all the time, nonstop. It's Bond. It's not Bond. It's everybody. It's almost every sequence that isn't like a fight is this. It's either movies either fucking or fighting. One of the two things is happening, or giving exposition that is confusing. That's part of the charm, but it is a silly plot. Anyway, enjoyed it. It's a good time. There's a bunch of them on HBO. I might watch them one or two more at some point if I find the time. Fill in my space.
Okay. Cool. Anything else about James Bond or Russia with Love? I really did like the plot, or the title of the movie was because he wrote it on the postcard to Moneypenny, and it was, he said, with love. And then he went on, and then on top of that, he wrote from Russia. Like, I thought that was really cool. Like how they did that.
Yeah. Although this is probably one of the least exciting theme songs. Like, I can't even remember this one. Yeah. This is your ranking theme songs. This one's not very good. It's not Goldfinger. I mean, that one's great.
Goldfinger!
He's the man. The man that, with the Midas touch.
Isn't it Tina Turner?
Shirley Bassett? It's Shirley Bassett. A spider's touch.
Goldfinger!
Right, that's that's great. There's other better ones, too.
Billie Eilish does one. There was which one was on the radio? Did then they wouldn't let him use it because they didn't like it. Was it the Spectre one? There was one that Radiohead did a version and they didn't like it.
Radiohead didn't like it, or the producers of the movie didn't like
the
it.
The Bond people didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Has that ever been publicized? Like, can I hear it?
Oh yeah, you can listen to the song. They ended up releasing it. It just wasn't one of
on what album? Like Moonshaped Pool, or where are we at? I don't even like.
Let me look it up. pause the podcast here. Everybody. It was Spectre. Yeah. Spectre is the song. Instead, they used Sam Smith song for that movie. But yeah, you can listen to it. It's available. Did they release it on an album? Was included as a B-side to the single Burn the Witch on the Moonshaped Pool. So yes, it was ended up being released.
What a B-side. Okay.
Oh, well, so apparently they submitted a different song and they rejected it. And then they recorded Spectre, but they ended up not using it because they liked the Sam Smith song more.
Okay.
Writings on the Wall. So it went unused. Interesting.
All right. Well, Eric, you want to let us know what we're doing next?
All right. I will give you some trivia for the next movie to watch. And, give me some guesses when you have it. So movie was released 10 years ago, 2014, almost to the day.
Oh, okay.
To April 2014 is when this was released. Wasn't a big hit, actually, a box office failure, and it had sort of mixed reviews. Grossed $29 million against a $25 million budget. So not a big hit, not well-loved by critics from 2014. The movie was the final film directed by the film's director. So this was this director's last film. And I'm not going to give you the name of the director, because that would maybe give it away. But well-known director, you've seen many of his movies, some of which I think you guys both really love. Some of them are not so great, but wide range of films and this was his last one.
Interesting. Okay. Is it his last one because he died, or is it?
He died
one
in 2022.
Oh, okay. So,
wasn't that, but I think retirement after instructing it. All right, so one of the film, I'll give you a couple of the film stars. Frank Langella, Sam Elliott, Ellen Burstyn, just to name a few.
Okay.
Dennis Leary.
Ugh, what?
Okay. Let's see. Sports is a big theme. It's a sports movie. Sports-ish movie.
2014. Sam Elliott. Frank Langella.
And the movie, so it's a sports movie, but it's specifically about like a specific sporting event.
Draft Day?
Draft Day is correct.
I was gonna guess that. Why didn't I say that? Kevin Costner, isn't it?
He's easily. Star, yeah. If I had said that, I would give
it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've never seen it. The NFL draft's coming up this week, boys. It's happening. I thought, let's watch a movie about the NFL draft. Have you guys seen this movie?
No,
I have not. I hear it referenced a lot. Not very positively, but yeah. I hear it referenced a lot.
It might be terrible. It might be really bad.
Who directed this?
Ivan Reitman.
Oh, get out.
Director of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, sure. I just didn't realize that he directed this movie.
Animal House. Yeah. Kindergarten Cop.
And this was his last go.
Yep. Last film. I guess his son kind of took over and basically made all the movies he was going to make. So, yeah. Draft Day. It's on Peacock. I don't know if you guys have Peacock or not.
I think so, but I'll get it watched. Don't worry.
You know. Otherwise, I think it is like there's some Amazon deal if you had to rent it. But
sure. I can spend a few bucks. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Draft Day. Kevin Costner's Draft Day. Chadwick Boseman is in it. The late Chadwick Boseman.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, the cast is pretty good.
We'll see. I think we can break down the draft picks and the trades and, give our draft thoughts. I don't know. I thought it'd be kind of fun.
No, it's fun. We'll check it out.
Yeah, I hear the trades are really wild in that movie, too.
I think the Seahawks play an integral part in the plot, so that'll be fun.
Good. Does he do the draft for the Seahawks?
No, he's the Browns general manager, I think. But I think the Seahawks have the first pick in the movie. Oh, and there's okay. some dealings involved in that, I think. I'm not, I could have that wrong. But I know he is the Browns. He is, they got like the real NFL teams and licensed, and he is the Browns general manager.
It worked out for the Browns in real life, so I'm sure it's true yep. life.
I'm sure it's a high draft pick then.
Okay. All right, well.
All right. Thanks,
watch
everybody.
Draft day, both the draft and the movie, and we'll come back in a week's time.
Yep. Vikings are going to trade up, get someone from Iowa probably.
Oh, then the actual draft, you think so? You think they're going to get DeGene?
Do you think there's an Iowa prospect in draft day? Is there a...
I doubt it. I doubt it very much. I mean, I don't know how many do they use. Actually, they don't use real players.
No, they're fake players. But, you know, those like, oh, the Alabama linemen. There's got to be some Iowa guy. That'd be great if there was.
Okay. Sure it's not somebody like from, Forest Lake, Minnesota.
An Iowa cornerback that likes to signal fair catches, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, that would be very prophetic. It would be very bizarre. No, we're not. Yeah, well, we'll find out.
Thanks, everybody from Iowa. Love you.
Bye-bye.